Current Affairs.
This is Akashwani. In the weekly program Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on key bills and discussions in the winter session of Parliament. The participants are K.G. Suresh, political analyst, and Sanjeev Chopra, senior journalist. Moderator is Teena Jha, journalist.
The winter session of Parliament concluded on Friday with both the Lok Sabha and the Rajya Sabha being adjourned sine die. This session saw high productivity in both houses. The Lok Sabha met for 15 sittings and recorded about 111% productivity, while the Rajya Sabha in its 269th session clocked nearly 92 hours of business with an impressive 121% productivity. On the legislative front, 12 bills were introduced in the Lok Sabha, 8 of which were passed, and the Rajya Sabha held discussions on 8 bills. There were also notable debates on Vande Mataram and electoral reforms, among other important issues. We'll discuss the big takeaways from the just concluded session of Parliament, especially the legislative outcomes and their significance, with two distinguished guests who are joining us on the program. I'm pleased to welcome Mr. K.G. Suresh, he's a political analyst, and Mr. Sanjeev Chopra, he's a senior journalist associated with the PTI. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us on this show today. Mr. Chopra, as someone who's been covering the Parliament, so I'll begin the program today with you. This winter session of Parliament felt quite different. It was much more calm, it was much more focused, and it was filled with sustained debate on several important issues, rather than the repeated adjournments that we have been seeing in the last few sessions. And there are also meaningful discussions on crucial bills. Despite differing opinions, at least what stood out was that the debates were quite substantive in nature. So before we delve deeper into the specific bills and their significance, give us an overview of how would you describe the overall character of the session?
So this winter session, although this has been one of the shortest sessions, you know, in the recent past,
right.
You know, the winter session has always been 21 days or more, but this time it was only 15 sittings. But this has been highly productive. As you yourself said, the Lok Sabha totaled 111% of its productivity, and the Rajya Sabha with even more, with 121%. You know, this session also saw a lot of reforms being initiated, you know, reforms at the grassroots level, which were much needed. You know, the bills that were brought in, especially during the last week of the session, you know, saw a lot of reforms, especially in the new bill and the nuclear bill, which is called the acronym as the Shanti Bill. You know, besides another important bill on the insurance bill allowing 100% FDI in the insurance sector was also passed. The first week saw discussions on the Vande Mataram 150th anniversary, with the Prime Minister replying to the debate in the Parliament, and the discussion on the electoral reforms in both houses, where the Home Minister Amit Shah replied in both the houses. So this has overall been a very productive session, and there have been some difference of opinion with the opposition. The opposition has tried to, you know, create their own noise, but overall this has been a very productive session, which the government has also, you know, lauded.
I think that's been quite remarkable, Mr. Suresh, because we've seen of late Parliament struggling with the frequent adjournments and logjam, sometimes on issues that the people even might not think as very important to them. But this session has been quite significant in terms of the output and the productivity, rather than the disruptions of which we've gotten used to, because houses wouldn't sit for productive sessions. How significant is it in context of the public perception about Parliament functioning, about the parliamentarians being serious about raising matters of public importance inside the temple of democracy?
Well, I think that if you look at the rhetoric ahead of the session, one thought that this would be another washout. But thankfully, it did not turn out to be. We had some, as my colleague rightly pointed out, some very important legislations. And of course, about the nomenclature, about those, and also about the, you know, intensive revision of the electoral rolls. There were a lot of protests and there were a lot of from the opposition side. But having said that, I think that, you know, I agree that there was a growing public perception that we are voting these members of parliament, but at the end of the day, they are not delivering. They are not raising issues of concern, and boycotts and walkouts are not leading to any fruitful, you know, enactment of laws. So it's not helping. And I think that the parliamentarians have shown ample maturity, and that despite the reservations, you see, one doesn't expect opposition to fall in line with every proposal of the government. But I think that it goes to the credit of both the managers on the side of the government who were able to bring together that coordination, and of course the opposition leaders who ensured that, you know, that everything went smoothly despite the hiccups. So overall, I would say that it was pretty satisfactory.
Coming now to some of the high-impact legislations, Mr. Chopra. The Viksit Bharat Guarantee for Rozgar and Ajivika Mission Grameen, which the government says represents a major shift in rural employment policy. Give us and our listeners a sense of the discussion that took place in both houses of parliament, because we saw the parliamentarians sitting till late night discussing this important bill. What were some of the major provisions that the opposition parties had concerns about, and how did the minister then address those concerns?
This important legislation basically, you know, brings about reforms in the rural economy. The Minister for Rural Development, Mr. Shivraj Singh Chauhan, while replying to the debate, you know, said that this was much required. It was obligatory on the part of the government to plug several loopholes in this bill, you know, in the earlier Manrega Act. Now, basically, the major change in this bill is that from a central scheme, it has now this new act will turn this rural employment generation scheme into a centrally sponsored scheme. Now, there were a lot of, you know, allegations of corruption and, you know, states not participating in it, in the scheme. The second most important thing in this bill is involvement of states, from the center giving all the funds and the states just implementing it. So now they've made it 60% to 40%, you know, 60% by the will be borne by the center and 40% by the states. But in hill states and in the northeastern states, it's as usual 90% by the center and 10% by
the states and the union territories.
And in the union territories of Chandigarh and Puducherry, it will be 100% central because they are governed directly by the central government. Now, the number of days for rural employment have been increased from 100 to 125 under this scheme. There will be more wages. Gram panchayats will be the fulcrum of this scheme now, because they will evolve the scheme and then, you know, they will recommend further. The scheme also envisages unemployment allowance to, if the gram panchayats fail to, you know, provide employment to for at least 15 days. So this is primarily been, the changes brought in the scheme are primarily to avoid misappropriation. And there'll be monitoring of the schemes, of the data and everything, through special data under the PM Gati Shakti scheme, so that there is no nothing hanky-panky. And primarily the four areas in which the rural employment will be provided will be in water conservation, livelihood, rural infrastructure and disaster management. So they've specified a lot of things because this was a 20-year-old scheme and it required many changes. So the minister, you know, although he couldn't speak much in the Rajya Sabha yesterday amid uproar created by the opposition benches and also in the Lok Sabha, because the debate carried on till much late in the night, you know, past midnight. The Lok Sabha, I believe, ended at 1:30 and the same was in the Rajya Sabha yesterday. The opposition has only raised one prong: what was the need and what was the hurry, you know, in bringing this bill.
And the burden on the states is something that they also spoke about.
And putting the burden, financial burden on states. But the government has its own reasons, you know, that there was not enough involvement by the states. So once the states will spend money, so they'll also be more involved in the planning process, and since their finances will also be involved, so they'll be, you know, the scheme, although the opposition calls it that they've killed the scheme.
In fact, before we proceed, let's listen in to the Rural Development Minister Shivraj Singh Chauhan's statement in the House, where he talks about how this bill strengthens rural livelihoods and productivity in the long run, which was much needed.
Ye bill viksit Bharat ke liye viksit gaon ke nirman ka bill hai, jisme 100 din jo rozgar ki guarantee thi wo bada ke 125 din kar di gayi hai. हम रोजगार भी देंगे और 100 से बढ़ा के 125 दिन. लेकिन केवल रोजगार नहीं, जो महात्मा गांधी जी का सपना था स्वावलंबी गांव, वो स्वावलंबी स्वयंपूर्ण विकसित गरीबी मुक्त और रोजगार युक्त गांव बनाने का ये बिल है.
Mr. Suresh, I'll take also your perspective on this very transformative bill. MGNREGA has been a landmark scheme for close to 2 decades now. How significant do you think is it that the government is now trying to shift towards a more skill-oriented, more output-linked rural employment model?
Absolutely. You see, Shakespeare had famously said that what's in a name? a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. So it's very unfortunate that the entire focus was on the name, whereas it is the substantive part that should have been the focus. And because there are some very clearly, you know, demarcated, I believe that the differences are very clear from the previous bill. Undoubtedly, MNREGA played a very critical role in strengthening the rural economy, in promoting rural livelihood over the years. But let us face it that, you know, it was plagued with corruption. It was plagued with a lot of shortcomings, and there was a need to overhaul that. The government over the last 11 years tried, after the NDA government came to power, they tried to bring about reforms, but somehow it was felt that, you know, what is it called, a total overhaul was required, and that is how this has come into being. Please remember, apart from the aspects that my colleague has already touched upon, I don't want to repeat them. The administrative cost, for example, has been hiked. For the simple reason that there was no proper administrative mechanism, and because of which a lot of problems were happening. So now there would be more manpower to monitor, there would be more manpower to execute the things at the ground level. That's there. The second thing is that, you see, earlier also the state governments used to pay for the unemployment dole, as you may say, that the allowance, which in case they are not able to provide, you know, employment, they used to. But now it has been put into a 60-40 ratio for a simple reason that the states would equally are partnering the scheme. It's a center-state, you know, kind of in the spirit of cooperative federalism, and that there is accountability. Otherwise, it used to be a kind of a free dole which would come from the center. So it is important to ensure that. The third aspect, which is the focus, is on building long-term infrastructure. There was a mismatch. We used to hear stories, I remember the initial days, when on paper a pond would be dug, on paper the pond would be, you know, sealed. You know, all these things used to happen. But now there would be concrete, you know, not just monitoring, but strict compliance, that these are the targets. You have to create a rural infrastructure. You have to have, you know, water, as rightly pointed out, is going to be a very important, where check dams and other stuff is going to be. Then long-term rural infrastructure is also going to be, livelihood infrastructures are going to be created. So once that is created, they are not going into the center, you know. These structures and everything is going to benefit the states only at the end of the day. So I think that, you know, without making it sensational, and we need to go into the nuances of it. And if you go into the nuances, there is a far more accountability is there. Now, digital technology is going to be, you know, including artificial intelligence, is going to be used extensively to monitor them, to have real time feedback. That is also being direct benefit transfer is going to happen, so that the discrepancies which was there, there was a disconnect between how many number of people were employed actually and the actual people on the ground, they were there. So the biometrics are going to be introduced. A lot of these new features have been added on, which is going to strengthen it. And I am sure that, you know, that is going to, and of course, without impacting the agricultural work, you know, so that pause, that states have been given the authority, you know, they have been given the mandate that they will decide that what would be the pause period, you know, of 90 days or, you know, that when there wouldn't be any work under the, you know, so that the agricultural season, you know, doesn't suffer for lack of labor. So that has also been taken into account. So comprehensive, it's a very comprehensive exercise. A lot of homework has gone into it based on not just the experiences from the, you know, UPA regime, but also the experiences from the NDA regime. And I think that overall, it has come as a very end.
Certainly. And I think all efforts have been made to ensure that the changes that are brought about are aligned with also our Viksit Bharat vision. And perhaps that's where the name also describes. It's called the Viksit Bharat Guarantee for Rozgar and Ajivika Mission Grameen. So while this one is aimed at transforming the rural economy, another one which aims to sort of reshape India's nuclear landscape is the Shanti Bill, Mr. Chopra. Again, talk to us about some of the key features of the bill. And when the government says that it's going to modernize the legal framework of India's nuclear energy sector, which is in line with contemporary technological, economic and energy realities, which are some of the key changes that it brings about, which caters to all of these aspects?
So this Shanti Bill primarily amends the Atomic Energy Act of 1962 and the Civil Liability for Nuclear Damages Act of 2010. Now, basically, it amends the Nuclear Suppliers Liability Clause, and this clause has been removed. So what it means is that suppliers will not be held liable in case of an accident. So government has said that this was creating hindrance in the setting up of new nuclear plants in the nuclear sector. Now, India's focus is to have green energy and zero emissions by 2070. Now, to achieve that goal, you know, India wants to set up more and more nuclear plants. so that we get clean energy and there are no emissions. Currently, India produces around 8.8 gigawatts of power from the nuclear sector, which is just 2% of its total requirements. Now, India aims to increase this to around 100 gigawatts, which is to take it to 10% of the total requirements. Now, if we compare this with other advanced countries, for example, France has 65% of its total power coming from nuclear energy, which is totally green energy. Now, France has the advantage that it also supplies such green energy to neighboring countries because there is a grid in all over Europe, and you know, Germany buys it from France and other countries in European Union, you know, buy it from there. Now, the major clause, nuclear energy is basically, you know, non-fossil, and so there'll be zero emissions. India currently has around 25 nuclear reactors at 7 locations, and they want to add 8 new nuclear reactors are under construction. So India wants to set up more nuclear reactors because this clause of civil liability was coming as a hindrance because suppliers were not providing their equipment for setting up reactors and other equipment required for setting up nuclear plants. Now, when the supplier is not providing you a reactor or other equipment, you know, the nuclear plant was not getting set up and the gestation period was increasing. Like, for example, this has happened in Jetapur. You know, there were discussions. Now, all this clause has been removed, although the government says that they have strengthened the security, the safety clauses in this bill. You know, they've added all the security clauses in this bill itself. So before setting up a plant, there'll be stringent measures for safety.
In fact, let's listen into Union Minister Jitendra Singh's statement, wherein he asserts that despite an upgradation in the regulated nuclear structure, the safety and safeguards mechanism stay with the government, and he's tried to allay all the concerns also related to the liability. Listen in.
The bill, Sustainable Harnessing and Advancement of Nuclear Energy for Transforming India, be taken into consideration. एक बड़ा ही महत्वपूर्ण बिल है और ये भी कहा जा सकता है कि एक ऐतिहासिक विधेयक, एक ऐसा विधेयक जो कभी किसी ने उम्मीद ना की, कभी कल्पना ना की, और ये इसलिए संभव हुआ that we have a Prime Minister Narendra Modi ji, who has the capacity to take out-of-box decisions and to break the taboos of the past. और इस टाइटल का महत्व इसलिए भी बढ़ जाता है कि आज से 60-70 बरस पहले जब हिंदुस्तान ने अपना परमाणु कार्यक्रम शुरू किया तो दुनिया भर में एक बड़ा तनाव का माहौल था. हिरोशिमा नागासाकी को हुए कुछ ही बरस गुजरे थे और बहुत सारे देश हिंदुस्तान को शक की निगाह से देखने लगे थे. अब इस बिल को लाने का भाव क्या है, कारण क्या है? जैसा कि हम सब जानते हैं कि भारत का भौगोलिक स्तर पर रोल भी बढ़ रहा है, भूमिका भी बढ़ रही है. एंड इफ वी हैव टू बी अ ग्लोबल प्लेयर इफेक्टिवली, वी हैव टू लिव अप टू ग्लोबल बेंचमार्क्स, फॉलो ग्लोबल पैरामीटर्स and adopt global tragedies.
Nuclear energy has been a very regulated sector. We've often seen that it does not find too much mention in public discourse. It's missing from public discussions as well. Through this bill, the effort of the government is to ensure that your current needs are met, but at the same time, it's also futuristic. When we are working towards a Viksit Bharat vision, do you think what aspect of the bill and the benefits do you think should people understand more about, not just in terms of how it meets our needs, but also in terms of how secure and safe it is going to be, and the concerns about which the parliament, both houses of parliament, have discussed at length?
I believe that one of the fears that have been expressed by critics of this bill is that the encouragement given to the private sector. And I think that, you know, there were similar apprehensions when it came to defense issues, when it came to strategic issues. But today you find, you know, they are building aeroplanes, they are building fighter aircrafts, that they are involved in the building of these. But that does not mean the second fear, which is related to that, is that the public sector is being ignored. But that's not the case. It's not being neglected. If you look at the funding pattern over the last few years, you would find that, you know, the nuclear corporations of the government, the Atomic Energy Commission and all those institutions, their fundings have considerably gone up. But that is not enough because it's only 2% contributing to. We need to enhance power for that. Government sector alone cannot promote it. You need PPP model. At the end of the day, the key remains with the government. The government is going to be the regulator. It's only going to be an enabler for production of more nuclear energy. And this nuclear energy is not just for power generation. You see, it is cancer treatment is concerned. So that is also required. I think that radiation, what happened in Chernobyl. So yes, we need more public awareness programs so that public apprehensions. It has led to protests also in states like Tamil Nadu over nuclear power plants. You have nuclear power plants all over the world. How many accidents have you reported? Except maybe for a Chernobyl. No major accident has been reported all these years. And other, you know, whether it's hydropower, there have been more accidents there in terms of earthquakes, in terms of landslides. They have been impacted more compared to nuclear, you know. So nuclear is pretty safe. That is what the government bills are aiming at. For this, I believe that Shanti Bill is need of the hour.
Both of you have been long-term observers of the manner in which governance reforms have played out. Now, as these bills move from parliament to the implementation phase, what more can the government expect to do? The government has done its bit, made the statement on the floor of the House, but its work doesn't stop there. In order to allay all these apprehensions, particularly related to the safeguard mechanisms,
setting up a nuclear plant in highly populated areas in India, very less areas, which is sparse. We have a big population and less area compared to other countries. Like, the density is very high. So that raises concerns of people in setting up the nuclear plants in highly populated areas. There have not been very many accidents across the world. Chernobyl is one and Fukushima has been the other. And there have been very stringent measures for safety and security in such plants. But India is now wanting to set up even smaller plants. But the only fear that some of the people are raising is that the cost of production is very high as far as when it comes to nuclear power. But it has its advantages too. You get clean energy, but it's very expensive. So who will buy your expensive energy? So these concerns are there, but the government needs to actually go out to the common people and allay such fears. So government needs to allay all those fears that these are very safe. So that's the only concern that needs to be addressed at the grassroots level.
Another bill which has been opened up for private investment, 100% FDI, is the insurance bill. It's named the Sabka Bima Sabki Raksha Bill, and it aims at increasing India's insurance penetration. Mr. Chopra, the question to you now is, if we compare India's insurance penetration to the global standards, it's still quite low. How will increasing FDI enhance that kind of insurance penetration? How do you think more and more people in different parts of the country will now be insured, which is the ultimate objective of this bill? The name says you need to cover everyone and there should be insurance for all. So what are the features that ensure that that kind of penetration happens in every part of the country?
There were concerns expressed by some of the opposition members on raising the FDI limit to 100% under this bill. Earlier, the insurance sector was closed in India to any foreign investment. Then they started with 24%, increased it to 50 and then 74, and now it has been made to 100%. Now, what it means, while replying to the debate, the finance minister said that this will help increase penetration of insurance among our population. Currently, India is very low. Now, what was happening was that foreign companies, when they come into India, now they can directly set up shop when there is 100% FDI. Right now, they had to find a local partner. So the local partners were not available for several reasons. Things were not working out. You had to have a local partner. Now, when more and more foreign companies come in, the insurance premiums will reduce. There'll be more competition amongst insurers. Okay. And the common man will benefit the most because the premiums will reduce. And in the developed world, you'll see insurance for everything, almost everything. Right now, India's insurance is like your assets are insured, your travel is insured. But abroad, you'll have insurance for almost everything. You know, when you are traveling from one station to another, there is an insurance for a particular asset. You have a separate insurance. This will further increase. And when more and more foreign companies will come into the country, this will only help the common man. You get more choices.
Okay, these were about some of the crucial bills. In fact, before we proceed, let's listen in to Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman's statement in the House.
I rise to move that the bill to further amend the Insurance Act 1938, the Life Insurance Corporation Act 1956, and the Insurance Regulatory and Development Authority Act 1999 as passed by the Lok Sabha be taken into consideration.
Moving forward, Mr. Suresh, the session also saw discussions on Vande Mataram, one of the last standing pillars of our identity. How do you view the Parliament's role in not just shaping policy matters? This was an important moment for us to commemorate 150 years of the national song, which is more than just a melody. It was a movement of sorts which helped our forefathers fight against the British. Most importantly, it gave them the strength to unite against the colonial forces. How important is it for our Parliament to not just discuss policy matters, but at the same time give enough prominence to cultural and emotional aspects of what makes India into what it is today?
Parliament is the ultimate representative of the people of this country. And what Parliament is expected is to give us leadership, not just politically, but also culturally, spiritually. This is a very poignant moment in our history when we are celebrating 150 years of Vande Mataram, which had stirred the passion of millions of Indians. When Bankim Chandra made it a part of Anand Math, it was written much before in 1875, only in the 1880s that it was incorporated into Anand Math. And it was the war cry of the freedom fighters. We have always looked at our land as our mother. The farmer looks at his land as mother, which gives him the produce. This touch, that of the salutation to the mother, that expression of the national sentiment by the Parliament is reflective of the nation's mood. Vande Mataram continues to resonate in every Indian's heart and mind. I really salute, and the long speech by the Prime Minister on this, very emotional speech that he rendered.
Let's listen into the Prime Minister's statement. He initiated the discussion on Vande Mataram in Lok Sabha, and this is what he spoke about, the resilience and the strength of Vande Mataram and how we need to make it more relevant to today's and future generations.
वंदे मातरम 150 वर्ष की यात्रा अनेक पड़ावों से गुजरी है, लेकिन आदरणीय अध्यक्ष जी, वंदे मातरम का जब 50 वर्ष हुए तब देश गुलामी में जीने के लिए मजबूर था, और वंदे मातरम के 100 साल हुए तब देश आपातकाल की जंजीरों में जकड़ा हुआ था। जब वंदे मातरम 100 साल का हुआ तब देशभक्ति के लिए जीने मरने वाले लोगों को जेल के सलाखों के पीछे बंद कर दिया गया था। जिस वंदे मातरम के गीत ने देश को आजादी की ऊर्जा दी थी।
To wrap up the conversation, Mr. Chopra, electoral reforms was another key theme that came up for discussion in both houses. Since all of our legislations were focused on futuristic India and how we need to align all our efforts towards our Viksit Bharat vision, in terms of strengthening our electoral process on aspects of transparency, on aspects of voter empowerment, on aspects of making it more technology friendly, what was the sense of the discussion that came up in both houses after that debate?
So this debate on election reforms, normally the last few sessions have gone by because ever since the Election Commission started the exercise of special intensive revision of electoral rolls. Now the opposition has been creating a lot of hue and cry over this SIR exercise, making all kinds of allegations. But this, the government has said, was obligatory on the part of the Election Commission because only an Indian can vote in these elections. And over the years what has happened is that a large population in India who migrated from various neighboring countries have managed to get their identity cards or Aadhaar cards and other things, you know, and they've started even voting in these elections. Now, this exercise is normally conducted every few years, but it had been a very long time that it was not conducted in Bihar. Now, it was after, I believe, 2 decades or so that this exercise was conducted. Now, this debate actually helped dispel all those false notions and narratives about the special intensive revision that the Election Commission was carrying out. So now this has been happening in 12 other states and 4 union territories. Finally, it will be conducted all over the country in every state, including in Delhi. So this was very necessary. And although the opposition wanted the discussion only to be focused on SIR, but the government said that it cannot be focused on either the Election Commission or the SIR.
It covered the wider reforms as well related to the election process. Reforms.
We can only have a discussion on that.
So all in all, it's been a productive session. Let's hope that the tone, the productivity is carried forward to the next sessions as well, so that we have a lot more to discuss about. But with that, we'll have to call it a wrap on this discussion. Time allows us to take up only that much. Thank you once again, Mr. Suresh, Mr. Chopra, for your valuable inputs.
You were listening to a discussion on key bills and discussions in the winter session of Parliament. The participants were K.G. Suresh, political analyst, and Sanjeev Chopra, senior journalist. Moderator was Tina Jha, journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.
Current Affairs.